I'm actually pretty excited about this talk because a lot of people right now are kind of just getting into Windows Azure. And in this talk, what we'll do is we'll explore the different ways in which you can take Azure and integrate it with SharePoint 2010. Now, that's not to say that you can't integrate it with SharePoint 2007, but the point is I will talk predominantly about 2010. My email is on the slide here, so if you have any questions and you want to follow up with me an email, feel free. And also my blog is there as well. Okay? I got a couple of slides, but for the most part for breakouts, I like to walk through demos and kind of show the how-to. Hopefully that's okay with y'all. Yeah? So with that, let's kick things off here and get things going. So just to reinforce, the types of things that you can do with SharePoint when we talk about Azure. Well, first of all, let's just define Azure. I know a lot of people put their hand up this morning when I asked who was at least had heard of Azure. How many of you are actually developing on Azure? Has anybody built an app for Azure? So a couple of you, so three of you. I'll walk through kind of the starting point, what Azure looks like, what the tools look like, then we'll very quickly get into the types of integration that you can do with SharePoint. It's a fairly interesting talk in terms of what you can do, and it's broad. But what this basically represents is our starting point here. So we can think of Azure as our operating system in the cloud. And this morning when I was talking about reach and scalability, what you'll see me do today is take services and deploy them into Azure so I can then pull them back and leverage them in the context of SharePoint. You probably won't be seeing SharePoint online today, but certainly you saw Bing this morning, you saw Office Web Apps. I'll focus mostly on Windows Azure and SQL Azure. If you're looking for, .NET Service Bus examples, I've got some back in my office, and I can send you those. But for today, I think it'll be enough for us to focus on those two things to get started. Now, if you're just getting started and you want to set up your environment, I kind of laid this out as these are the things that you would have to get set up. So first of all, you want to have, Windows Server. You want to make sure you have SharePoint installed. Obviously, you have a few more things to integrate with if you use SharePoint Server, but certainly SharePoint Foundation would work as well. Office Pro Plus, VS, SPD, SQL Server 2008 R2 is a must if you want to integrate with SQL Azure and the Azure Tools and SDK. Now, there's a developer keys that you have to get as well. So obviously, I put the Bing as optional, but you absolutely have to get the Azure developer key. You have to get an account. Now, there is a VM that you can get. You can download the IWVM, and it has everything above that waterline. And all you need to do is install the Azure Tools and the SDK, and then get your developer key from Azure, and you're off and running. Okay? Now, sounds easy. It takes a few days to get your Azure developer key set up, but once you do, it's great because now you can start getting engaged with Azure development. So let's get started here, just jumping into what Azure development looks like. So basically, once you've got your key and once you get your developer account set up, you can go to your Azure portal right here. And you can see here I've got https://windows.azure.com. From the developer portal, I can manage all my activities. So for example, if I build a WCF service and I deploy it into Azure, I can manage that updating of that service from my developer portal. Okay? And you can see here that I've got a number of different applications and services that I'm managing from my developer portal. So for example, let's click on one of these guys, the Contoso Store Manager. We can see when I click on that, it pulls in some information about that particular application. In this case, it's an ASP.NET application. You can see here that I have the ability to upgrade, suspend, configure, and do have other things in the context of this developer portal. I can also go ahead and click on the hosted site, and this represents a very simple ASP.NET application that's tied into a SQL Azure database in the cloud. Okay, and I'll get to where that lives in just a second. But the point is, I can manage my applications and my services from within my Azure developer portal in the cloud. Okay? Now, that said, this is kind of the portal-facing side. I need to have a set of tools inside of my Visual Studio environment that allows me to essentially build an application and push it into Azure. Okay, in order to do that, I go into Visual Studio, open up Visual Studio. I can basically new up a project here, go new project. And then I can go into the cloud project template, click Windows Azure Cloud Service. We'll just be SBC test. Click OK. And what that does, it invokes some options for me to select from these different options, whether it be Visual Basic or Visual C Sharp. I can select an ASP.NET web role, which is essentially an application that you just saw. I can go ahead and select an MVC, WCF role, service role, kind of move it over, click OK. And then what happens is Visual Studio sets up this project structure for me. Now here what you've got on the right-hand side is fairly normal ASP.NET application. So if you're pretty used to building web applications, you're probably familiar with a lot of this here. But basically what it sets up for you, if we go ahead and look at this guy here in the context of a service, is we've got our contract, we have our service file, and all the stuff that you'd expect to find when you're building out these typical services. Now the one thing is, once I've built out my service and I want to get it into the cloud, there's a publishing process, and that's SBC publish. We can see that it'll create a service package, and I click OK, and of course there's nothing in my service right now except the code spit that comes along with the project templates, but then I have these two files that are built out for me. Basically a configuration file and this resource file. You could think of it as an archive with all the things that you're going to dump into the cloud. Okay? These two files are key because basically when I want to get back into Azure, go into my portal, what I need to do is actually go ahead, and you can see here when I click upgrade, I'll click upgrade, it's going to prompt me to load two files. One of them is the configuration file, and another one is the archive file, okay? And here you can see I've got browse and browse. These guys right here. So I got to pull up that configuration file and my resource file. So that, in essence, at a very, very high level, very quickly, is how you get a solution into the cloud and be able to manage that from your developer portal. Okay? Does that make sense? Pretty straightforward, right? Okay. So, that said, that's the tools. Now, from the perspective of Visual Studio 2010, that's how you would do it. You can also leverage SharePoint Designer. As I mentioned this morning from the IT Pro or Power User perspective, I could literally take SharePoint Designer, build out an external content type, and connect that up to SQL Azure. Okay, so in my toolbox, it's not only Visual Studio, but it's also SharePoint Designer. So for example, click on external content type. I could go ahead and connect myself up to SQL Azure. Now, interestingly, with SQL Azure, you can see here I've got this OBA SQL Azure. This is a content type, or external content type I've built and deployed into the BDC metadata store. This just allows me to pull some data from SQL Azure. Now, SQL Azure, again, looks and feels just like your normal SQL Azure would. You'll find that in the current instance of SQL Server, you're going to be doing a little more scripting. So we'll say customer, and we'll go ahead and execute. And you can see here that I've got this data that lives in the cloud. The one thing I will be looking at is store information, so why don't we go ahead and do that one. Okay, store information, and that's some store information. And so when I go back to my SharePoint Designer and I walk through this process, we'll go ahead and back to external content types, click external content type, click new content type, and new content type. I'll go click here to discover the external content type. I can add a connection, click SQL Server, click OK. Here's where I would actually put the database server name of my SQL Server in the cloud and the database that I want to attach to it. Now, the one thing I want to do, though, is I have to impersonate a custom identity, because basically when we're connecting to SQL Azure, we have a separate set of credentials, right? And for those of you who have learned or used like the Secure Store Service or the SS or SSO, whatever it was, single sign-on in 2007, this is very much the same thing, right? It's a way to have an application ID that has a user and password name associated with it, so that when I call into that, I can pass in that username and password, and it'll actually federate out to SQL Azure and bring that data together, okay? So very simply, that's how I would do it, go through this process of bridging the two. And using SharePoint Designer, what happens is I can get this external list here where now I have the capability to essentially go ahead and edit any of my entries inside of SQL Azure. So again, SharePoint Designer, fairly simple way to build out a relationship with my SQL Azure site. So we'll go here and we'll say, we'll say East King Anne, or how about King Alfred? And we'll click Save. And then what happens is that should take this data, persist it up into my SQL Azure instance in the cloud. And I am running this live, so we'll see here, East King Alfred, and we'll go back up here. You can see that says East Queen right now. Let's go and execute that one more time. We should see East King Alfred. So the point is, I have this read-write relationship with SQL Azure cloud data that I've built very quickly as an IT pro or a power user using SharePoint Designer. Now, I don't know how many people were here to watch Scott Hillier's talk here on search, or you've been studying the BCS. You can also use the BDC metadata template inside Visual Studio 2010 to very much the same thing, except you're doing it programmatically. I'll show an example a little bit on that. But the point is, I just wanted to get your kind of appetite wet as to here's SQL Azure, here's SharePoint Designer, here's a very simple way to connect the two using the Secure Store service to connect them in between. Okay? So that's just a real quick tour of the tools. So let's jump back here, see what we got. That's from current slide. Go forward. All right, so in terms of architecting and how we might build out an application that integrates with the cloud, we can think of it in a couple different ways, right? Ultimately, what we're trying to do is we're trying to consume data, or we're consuming a service that lives in Azure. Our middle tier, though, can be any number of things. For example, it could be ASMX, it could be WCF, it could be BCS, or it could be an OData REST API of some sort that brings that data back into the context of our SharePoint experience. Now, I know you can't really see the top there, so as you go across the top, the client in this case could be literally anything ranging from the Backstage or client extensibility in Office. I'll show you an example of that. It could be Office web apps, right? So we could literally write a WCF connector and connect using JavaScript and then pull some data down from Azure and then push it into an Excel web access web part, okay? We could do that sort of thing. Silverlight web part, probably a little more common in terms of the way in which you're going to integrate with Azure. And of course, there's other things in SharePoint such as web parts that you can also build. Lots of different things and lots of different APIs that you can leverage in the context of that experience. Now, here's a slide. There's a lot of words on this slide, so I'm not going to go through every single one of them. But the point is, this kind of gives you a listing of all the different APIs that are fairly common that you could leverage to integrate with Azure. So, for example, SharePoint Client Object Model. I want to take some data from Azure. I want to pull it in. I want to push it into a list. Client Object Model really is a very easy way to do that. BCS, I just showed you that, so that's SharePoint Designer. Silverlight, Sandbox Solutions, et cetera, et cetera. What I'm going to show you today, SharePoint Client Object Model, BCS, Silverlight, Custom Client, Standard Web Part, Office Server Services, and a little bit of Link kind of mixed in there. These are the demos that I'm going to go through to kind of give you a sense for how you can do some of this stuff, okay? So that's essentially what's possible. So drilling into the technologies, what I did to kind of showcase how you can integrate with the cloud was I literally sat down and built a fairly simple app, okay? It's kind of a Frankenstein app. It just illustrates the different ways in which you can integrate with the cloud, all right? So it's a SharePoint site. It's got some three main requirements in the SharePoint site, basically managing store sales. And in the context of managing store sales, there's Excel services, there's JavaScript, there's SQL Azure, Silverlight, and REST. I've also got another part that manages franchise store information. And this is where I've taken Bing, I've integrated it with BCS, which is further taking data from SQL Azure. So you know that external list I just showed you that I created with SharePoint Designer? I've actually connected that to my Bing map. So essentially, any changes I make in my external list or any persistence to my SQL Azure data changes, my Bing map is going to be updated with new store locations. Okay? and also have a WCF Azure service in there as well. And the final thing I wanted to show you was an Office document, because again, tying content types back into the BCS, back into SQL Azure data is an interesting proposition if we're thinking about this SharePoint experience and then tying it back into Office. So that's kind of the Contoso Cloud app. Again, this is a Frankenstein app. It's not professionally, you know, veneered with any design, but it should give you a sense for how to get some of these, you know, common and simple integrations up and running. So let's jump in and look at this application. So we'll run through SharePoint here. Let's just kill this to get a bit more. Now we're back on my PC. Okay. So this was the stores. If we go back home, this is my, you know, fairly simple SharePoint site. You can see I've got some sub-sites here. I've got one that's franchise sales. If we click on franchise sales, there's a couple things going on. You can see at the top here, I've got some JavaScript that's going out and grabbing some numbers, and I can update my JavaScript, or I can update my Excel web access. And this is all client-side code, so literally I could take this code and run it in the cloud without any sort of dependency on the server. And I also have a little widget down the bottom here that's going out, and it's going to make a call and load in some competitor sales. It's a web part, just allows me to have a connection into my SQL Azure data source from a different perspective, right? So imagine when I'm talking about SQL Azure, is I can literally build a SQL adapter, I could build BCS, all these different ways in which you learned back in .NET, you know, 1 and 2, you can really forward apply to interacting with this data in the cloud. And then just, you know, for giggles on the right-hand side here, I stole Paul's nice little widget from this morning just to add a little design flair, just to pretend. So at least I have some design element in my Frankenstein app. But more importantly, I think the thing is we've got some Excel web services interacting with our Azure service, and we've got key competitor sales here. Now, if we jump back and take a look at least at a couple of those, let's look first at the store location manager. So this, where am I here? Let me just open up my Visual Studio. Here we go. Here's my Azure web part. Now, in terms of loading up Azure, so one of the key things I'm working on right now, and I'm still working on this, is leveraging jQuery and an Azure service call, kind of pushing that into SharePoint. There's some trickery there trying to get this up and running. I've had it successfully running in the context of Visual Studio, making a call out to a service, but getting it embedded in SharePoint has been a little more tricky. But you can see up on the right-hand side, basically what I'm doing is I'm using jQuery, I'm using some modules, kind of dumping some JavaScript and some HTML and into my site assets folder here, and basically just trying to get that up and running and working. So it makes a call, pulls a figure back, a number back, and then populates those four fields. Fairly simple stuff. The big thing is getting that JavaScript call working with the WCF. Now, the one thing here, what I'll do is I'll show you the, this is the SQL adapter. So this is basically that little widget at the bottom. And what I can do here, maybe I'll just take a step back for a second and show you that. All of these files here are basically created going File New Project, and I go into SharePoint, click Empty SharePoint Project, and then I add things like a web part to those projects, okay? So in the case of this one I'm showing you here, you can look down here, and let's go down here. As your web part, you can see that I've added a web part, and it's a very simple little bit of code inside the web part that essentially is a connection string. But at the end of the day, this is older code that most of us in this room are familiar with, right? It's basically, like I said, forward applying some of the SQL adapter technology to integrate with our SQL Azure site. And what I'm doing is just passing in that username and password here. You probably would want to encrypt it in some way, and then pulling back a data set that I can then data bind or query in a very simple way. And of course, you can see my select all from customers.dbo.competitorsales. And that results in that very little widget near the bottom of the page. Let's go down here. Full screen, go back to this guy right here. So again, a couple very simple ways to integrate Azure and SharePoint through the web part and empty SharePoint project templates. Now, that's somewhat interesting. I think generally what I've been feeling is it gets a little more interesting when you start to look at services, right? Because services allow you to do a much broader set of things when you talk about Azure. So for example, if you jump over to the franchise store, we can see here that now I've got, you know, my Bing Maps. I've got over here, if you go to the right-hand side, I've got a couple things going on. I've got this load cities, which is going to go out and grab the cities, potential cities, and then load them back in. Okay? And then I've got this Contoso store information. Now, what we can do here is basically look at this from a business perspective and say, okay, I use my Bing Maps to locate the stores I have right now. I can see which potential cities have populations that could potentially have another store that would survive in that particular area. And I have Contoso store information. Now, basically what, well, let's start from the right-hand side. We'll kind of work our way around. The Contoso store information is an ASP.NET application, okay? If we go back into SharePoint and go back into Store Location Manager, I basically built it the same way where I started out kind of file-newing a project. But what I do is I built out an ASP.NET web role. And what we've got here is this ability to create this ASP.NET application. And here you can see that all we're doing is I've got an entity data model, and I'm updating that entity data model with a particular particular object. And so you can see here I've got a store ID, title, name, address, et cetera, and then I'm calling the save changes method to push that into my SQL Azure site. But the point is, I think more interestingly, is what I can do is push this into Azure, and I can do one of two things. I can go back into my, where's my Azure environment? We'll just open this up again. I can go back into my Azure environment. I can load up my projects. I can click on my Contoso Store Manager. This can act independently of SharePoint, okay? And you could think of, let's say I have a site somewhere where I want store managers to be entering in information. I could literally be hosting this out on the cloud where people could be interacting with this little application. At the same time, I could iframe it and pull it back and host it, or at least connect it back into my SharePoint site. All the while, the actual application and SQL Azure is hosted in the cloud, okay? Now, you can do one of two things to bring this particular application back as an iframe and put it into SharePoint. The first thing we can do is we go back here to our Azure Web Part project. Let me see here. I think this is it down. Where is it here? Let me open it up. I'll find it here. But basically, all we've got is that it? Basically, what we've got is an iframe set of code. I seem to have lost it here. Here it is, right here. You can see here that we've got just a set of iframe code. And if we look at that iframe.append line, I'm just basically building, you know, an object, a string builder object that sets the width and sets the height, sets the source to that source cloud app that I have in the cloud, and basically then drops it into my SharePoint site as an actual web part. Now, the thing is, right, if you try to just take an iframe and took that code and put it into a content editor web part, you'd actually have to expand out your little widget that you would add into SharePoint, and it would be kind of useless in that respect from a design perspective. So in this sense, at least what I can do is I can determine what the width and height are and then actually put it into my SharePoint site as an installable object that I can then distribute, okay? So what this looks like, if you go back to our site, I can go back here and we can say, let's go back into our franchise. We can go up, we say site actions, and edit the page. And because I've basically deployed it into my SharePoint site, I can go insert, go into my web parts, and we can see that inside of my custom web part, I've got this iframe Azure web part. So I build it. It's a very simple line of code. I deploy it into SharePoint, but what it does allows me to dictate the height, the width of an application that lives outside of SharePoint, which essentially is an ASP.NET application hosted in Azure. Okay? Now, this is fairly simple, and certainly in the context of a simple widget, this might make sense. For more complex applications, you probably would want me doing other things, namely building and pulling it into SharePoint proper. But let's go ahead and just click Save. Now, the other thing we have here is this guy right here. So store, new store location possibilities, load cities. Now, what this is doing effectively, I believe, is calling a service that's interacting with some data in the context of our Azure site. So we'll go ahead and look at new store services. Any questions while I'm walking through this? I should take a step back. I don't mind if you ask questions as I'm walking through. Is there any questions so far? This is super easy. You guys are like, yeah, whatever, slam dunk. Okay. All right. Where is that application? I think this is it here. Here we go. So basically what I've done here is I went through that process, file, new, WCF service. I deployed that into the cloud. And once I've deployed it in the cloud, though, as we'll see, we can actually leverage that back inside the context of our applications, right? So if we go back up here, and I think it is, let's use this one because at least this will give you a chance to see what's going on. It'll load up the information. But when you deploy a WCF service into the cloud, you get this URL. Now, in this case, the URL, you can't get to it because I can't get to the particular folder. But of course, if I go service1.sbc, now you see I have a service link that lives in the cloud, all right? So the whole thing, build a service. Deploy it into the cloud. It gives you ability to take that service, pull the functionality back into an application. Now, I'm talking about SharePoint here. But the point is you could literally leverage this service in any application, right? So I could leverage it in a WIN format, a WPF app, Silverlight app, whatever. I could, you know, take this and put it into an ASP.NET web part. There's some things you need to do if you do that. But you can see now leveraging the cloud to kind of have this scalability factor with your service is a fairly exciting thing. So now that I have my service, we'll go back here. When I'm actually building out my services, one thing that I typically do, there is an environment, a local environment, a cloud environment with the Azure tools. So I could hit F5. It'll actually spin up that local cloud environment so you can test things out. I always build a test client. I'm sure those of you who've done service development do the same thing. But this is one of the key changes when I was talking about this morning. When you think about designing your software in a slightly different way, because you're deploying services into the cloud, once you get it into a production environment, debugging it is obviously a little challenging, right? You know, when I'm on my local environment, I can hit F5, set a breakpoint, I can get those bugs out in my local environment. It's a little more challenging. So the thing is, I always build a test client to make sure I've got all the bugs worked out of that code before I then put it into my production environment, okay? So in this case, we can take a look at the code. Let's go here, and that's my population object that you saw. Go and take a look at the actual code. You can see there's a bunch of stuff going on here. So I've got some list collection objects here, one of customer and population. So using this service, I can get a customer. So I can call get a customer, and that'll return an array. I can basically get all customers, and that basically gets all the customers that I'm generating with a helper method called generate customer data. If you look down here, you can see that I've got a bunch of customers I can generate and pass back. I can also generate population data. And this is essentially what I'm doing when I call the get population data. And that's what that little widget is doing, effectively calling this method in the service, which returns, it generates a bunch of population data that's all in memory, and it returns it back to SharePoint. Okay? Now, literally what I could do here is I've got this all this kind of code working in the context of my service. I could, if I wanted to, leverage data outside of the service if I wanted to, so I could deploy something alongside my service, or I could reach out to my SQL Azure site, do a query of some sort, pass back data. So the point is I could interact with service and data in the cloud and pull that back and interact with it in some way, shape, or form in the context of SharePoint. Does that make sense? Yes, sir. Is there still limitations? So is the question when you look at on-premises versus cloud-based solutions in terms of SharePoint Online or SharePoint versus SharePoint? What's the distinguishing factor there? Is it just looking at SharePoint on-premises, what are my limitations? Is that the question? Yeah, so it's a great question. So when we think about limitations, there's certainly some limitations. Let me think about this. I think certainly getting back and accessing file system resource would be one, right? I don't think you'd be able to create a service that would reach back. You could leverage the .NET service bus to do some of that for you and kind of punch a hole in the firewall. So that would be one way of doing that. But I think that's one general limitation. I'm sure there are others. None are popping in my mind. But I'm sure there are. Let me think about it, and maybe near the end I can kind of rattle off some other ones. But definitely file system resources would be one. I think the cloud kind of opens up the opportunity, though. You know, and thinking about this in a slightly different way, right? If we think about today, how would I deploy a service? I would probably deploy it to IIS, right? Or I would deploy it into the SharePoint root system or Hive. And so I may have authentication issues to deal with when I'm trying to come back into SharePoint from Azure. So that might be a limitation I'd have to handle. So again, system folder access or authentication I'd have to manage. The other thing, again, when we have this idea of scalability, moving outside of IIS to provide a wider scale accessible service might be another thing that you could do. So there's benefit, and I think there could be some drawbacks when we think about access and authentication. Hopefully that gives you a little bit. Any other questions before we move forward? Yeah? No? You guys are just totally plugged in, aren't you? Either that or you're thinking about drinking beer. Which one? All right. So basically then that's what we're talking about in terms of taking these different services and I'm pulling back and integrating those with SharePoint. So that's the population service. So if we jump back into our site for a second, basically, I showed you a couple things here. I showed you the Contoso store information, and literally I could go ahead and take a store and add it, and that would update that SQL Azure instance in the cloud. And I've got this service here. Whenever I click load cities, it goes out, calls that service, pulls it back, data binds it to my object. The other thing I've got going here is this Bing Maps, right? So this is all a part of the whole experience trying to figure out where these stores are. And this information here is dynamically loaded. So when the page loads, what happens is my Silverlight control, my Bing control that I have in a Silverlight application, it goes out. And using the SharePoint client object model, it reads my BCS, my external list that I've created, right? The external list, again, was that first list that I created, which is over here. Where was it? If we go back to home, is this guy right here. So any updates I make to this particular list are going to be persisted in two places. First of all, they're going to be persisted to SQL Azure. And second of all, because the Bing Maps is kind of pulling data, which is pulling data from SQL Azure using the BCS, it's also going to be updating the Bing Maps file, okay, or the Bing Maps application. So if you go back to our franchise store, and you can see here that we've got some stores that you see they're loading. Now, I've got a couple of things here. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to add an entry into my instance. So let's go ahead. And I think I've got a nice little script here somewhere. My iPad, Notepad, Denver. Now, this is me just using the insert into store information. I could literally do a couple different things here. I could go to my external list. I could update. But what I'm going to do here is just show you that generally when you're interacting with SQL Azure right now, you'd be going ahead and using some sort of SQL script to push it in. And then I would just execute it and add a row. And, of course, what we can do is we can go ahead and select all again. And we'll take a look at what that is. And we should see that store near the bottom. Canyon Sports, Terrence Mall. More importantly, 38627 to 102. So if you go ahead and go back to SharePoint, we'll go to our list to see if it's on the list as well to make sure that we have that fidelity experience. We can go down to the bottom. 31, there's our Canyon Sports. And then we go over to our franchise store. We'll refresh the page. And hopefully what we'll see is some Canyon store here somewhere if things work out for us. And let's go in a little bit here. I think it's this guy over here. So basically, if I was a business person, I'd probably get fired for making this decision by putting a store in the middle of nowhere. But that's okay. This is a demo. We don't have to worry about making these big business decisions. So the point is, you saw me kind of take data, add a record, gets persisted using BCS, and also gets updated in the Bing application. So very cool in terms of having this round trip experience. And I also, again, the other feed into SQL Azure is this ASP.NET application over here, okay? So again, you can have different ways to reach that data, different ways to handle that data in the context of SharePoint. Well, let's go ahead and take a look at the Bing integration to see what it looks like. Kill that. And where are we here? Bing integration. Now, basically creating the Bing map, I used the Silverlight web part, you know, the native Silverlight web part that ships with SharePoint. You could do one of two things here. You could wrap a Silverlight web part or a Silverlight application with a web part object, or just use the Silverlight media web part that's native to SharePoint. Okay? Basically, what you'll need is a Bing control. And I know, again, I know I talked about this morning, but I realize that Bing is not super popular here. But there's other things that you can leverage, other types of controls that you could leverage. And as long as you can get at the code, what you can do is leverage the client object model. Okay, and that's the key thing we're doing here, right? We're taking a Silverlight object, and we're going through, and we're reading this external list. We're taking that external list data, we're pulling it through, and then we're representing that on that map. Okay? Now, I hate to say go use Google, and hopefully this isn't being recorded because Google is not our friend, right? We like Bing at Microsoft. But the point is, we're obviously open to using any type of API out there where you can actually access the client object model. In this case, as long as you can access the client object model, you'd be fine. So here you can see in my class, up at top here, I've got the store locations list title, stores from Azure. That basically references this list back here. Store, so it's pulling this information here. And if we go down, you can see that I've got an IEnumerable, I've got list collections to manage that data in the context of my Bing Silverlight application. And here's kind of where the meat of the code begins to come out, right? You can see that I'm using the client context, and I'm sure a few of you went to Andrew Connell's session, right? You saw the client object model, so you're pretty familiar with this. But this is where I'm kind of creating a very simple camel query, creating an iQueryable object, going through. And the nice thing here about client object model is a little cleaner when it comes to syntax. It doesn't get rid of camel completely. I know that's probably one thing that is a little challenging when we have to code the queries against SharePoint data. But in this case, it's a very simple query that's kind of doing a select all and bringing it back. You can see I've got an execute query async, and I have a successful or a failure method or, you know, a function that basically will be called based on what the data comes back. Now, here's one thing that we should just draw your attention to. When you get the data back, right, this is filling the store list. And basically all I'm doing is filling an object. But it's a little challenging when you're dealing with external lists because you have to really specify the element or the index, right? So you can see here that when I go my var x and bcs list, which is my IEnumerable, I've got x.fieldValues.element at, and it looks like 3, 4, 5, 8, 7. Basically, what you want to do is set a breakpoint, bring the data back, and you'll have to look and see where the specific fields are from that returned external list so you can manage it properly into the Bing application, right? And irrespective of whether it's Bing, when you're dealing with external lists and the client object model, you kind of have to be careful because you always have to make sure you're kind of jumping across the first index element, which is the BDC identifier, okay? So just a heads up that you don't necessarily treat the external list the same way as you would treat other lists inside of SharePoint. Then, of course, you can see that when we go add stores to maps down here, this gets a little more into the core Bing functionality. And depending on what mapping geo service that you're using, it would have different functions and syntax here. But the point is, it's taking that information and it's kind of taking a location and putting push pins where the locations are coming from in terms of records from my store lists. Does that make sense? So fairly simple to recap. Stores list, client object model, grabs that stuff, grabs the goo, gets through, cycles through, and puts a push pin on the Bing map wherever the record tells it to in terms of the location. And then what you get ultimately is this Silverlight application. And again, because I was using the native Silverlight application, what I did was, let me go over here into franchise stores, was I basically went into actions, site actions, edit the page, and I inserted the web part, but what I did was when I was talking about the native Silverlight media, I picked the Silverlight web part, and basically if we go up to browse to my home site here in the Zaps folder, this is where I deployed my Silverlight application. So I just created a relationship, basically just a shortcut back to my Zaps library using the Silverlight media web part. Does that make sense? Any questions on that? And then there was silence. Awesome. You guys are totally like, you've got this. Right? Okay. So let's go jump back to our page just to make sure that we are done with that page. Okay. So let's jump back to our, I think we had the managing store sales. You saw that. Managing franchise store information, you saw that. Now, this is just some APIs. If you want to grab this deck off me, feel free. This is me playing around with calling or using the script manage to call services and having a code behind with some JavaScript. I'm still playing around with this, but I think it's very powerful because what this means is when you have a script that's embedded in let's say, SharePoint Online, I now remove my dependency on SharePoint on-premises, and I now can have a fully-fledged WCF call in the cloud that can integrate with Azure. And, of course, because there's things like the JavaScript Bing maps, I could literally have that relationship in the cloud. So it's just a pattern I'm trying to put together here. This is another pattern where we're taking information from the fields and putting them into the Excel Web Access. So again, this is scripting functionality that allows me to integrate with Excel on the client. Okay, I can do one of two things here. I can just update that little Excel named range I had stuck into my site as the web part, the Excel services web part, or I could literally go to the server and save the changes back. In this case, this API is just basically updating the actual cell services web part. It's not going back and saving changes to the server. So again, this is something I literally could take and do in the cloud without having to worry about, you know, any dependencies on the server for my services running. Okay? This is a recap of the consumption of the Azure data using the client context or the client object model. And again, I think you probably all have seen this in some fashion now because it seems to be fairly popular. But again, it just shows you that, you know, execute query async is the, you know, the asynchronous call from Silverlight. You would obviously have execute query when we think about the .NET based client object model. Okay? Demo managing proposals. So before I go to this demo, any questions? Again, I don't mind asking questions. I actually enjoy more interactivity. I know Europeans tend to be a little quieter than Americans. I don't know why. More reserved. Keeping your intelligence to yourself, maybe, is that it? But the point is, please, if you have any questions, just shout them out. Yes. Just one question. Okay. So just to repeat the question, it's about permissions and interacting with Azure. And basically, how do you do that, or how do you negotiate permissions between SharePoint and Azure in different ways? So it depends on what you're doing, right? Always the answer with SharePoint. But yes, you can respect permissions. In the case where I set this service as completely open, I'm basically implementing a service where I don't need any permissions whatsoever. But you could literally use claims-based authentication, and have a token that you can actually have a relationship with this service or whatever you're trying to interact with on the Azure side, you could pass a claim back and forth. So there would be that handshake, okay? So it's definitely possible. You know, in the context of the SQL Azure, that in essence, if we go back, I'll show you just for a sec because I don't think I showed you the central admin. Let's go back there for a second because I think that's an important element. If we go back in here and go into my central admin site, this was the list, just to show you. Remember, we built the list out using SharePoint Designer. In terms of permissions, because SQL Azure, again, is a separate set of permissions, I have to go into my managed service applications, and I actually have to define the username and password. So if we go down here to the secure store service, I would create a new instance of a secure store service. And here's where I would enter in my credentials, right? So I've got Azure DB, blah, and my new key. But the point is I would go in here and I would go through this wizard. And that would allow me to attach that particular secure store service application ID to this instance in the cloud. So again, we said add connection, SQL Server, OK. That Azure DB would go right there. And what would happen the first time I logged in on my client, it would prompt me for the credentials that it would then pass through to get that data from Azure. So depending on whether it's a service or depending on whether it's a data, you'll have to negotiate different credentials in different ways. Okay? Make sense? Okay. But the other thing I will mention here is, you know, for those of you who are also managing the BDC, if you go back, the nice thing is with our external lists, you have two levels of control that you can manage, right? The first one is here. I have the secure store service as an entry. The second is we go back to our central administration and go into the services. I have the business data connectivity service, right? So I literally can go in here and I can dictate read-write relationships for specific people to, you know, interact with this Azure SQL instance, right? So you can see here I'm the administrator on this box. I click on here. We can set object permissions, and then it'll load up. It won't load up that, but normally you should get, let's go do another one here, business connectivity services. Let me see here. Boba SQL Azure, let's do that one. Hopefully that will load up. I can set object permissions, but the point is what I can do is I can associate a person with read-write permissions, right? So if there's three people who you want to have just read permissions, you can sign it here, you know, and so on and so forth. So it's a very granular way of, even though you have open permissions over here for this secure store service, you can control them through the BDC. So it's just basically a second layer of security. Anyways, we'll keep moving on here. Where was I? So managing proposals. I wanted to talk a bit about managing proposals. So now what we've done is we kind of walk through the site. We go back here. I've showed you the fact that we have this store. We've talked a bit about the franchise sales. I've talked a bit about the store sales. But now what I want to do is I want to enable all the people who come to my site to be able to create a document and leverage the SQL Azure data in the context of my document. Again, in this case, because we're dealing with a .NET application, an assembly that we're basically loading when Word loads, I can go and build a content type out of it, build new document, franchise content type. And what that does, it loads up a Word document. And what it's going to do is when it loads, it's going to load in this custom task pane. And what that custom task pane does, I don't know if you can see this, but I'll just give it a little bit of zoom here on the right-hand side. This is loading up the data live from my BCS, my external list in SharePoint, which again is connected out to Azure. So in effect, my document is consuming Azure data. Now, I'm using the BCS as kind of a convenient way to do my intermediation of that data from Azure, but literally I could make a straight call out into Azure. So remember when I had that SQL adapter? I could literally be doing the same thing here. But the thing is, I want my external list to be my kind of point of reference in SharePoint. Okay, I don't want to have all these different things and kind of different ways of doing it. I just want to, you know, have my one way of doing it. So I can go in here, franchise, click Rob Barker, you know, whatever, add some information, blah, 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 blah. And this is my proposal to add a new store, so we'll say no. We'll say no. Population, add data, and we'll just click that. And that just adds some data in the context of the document. And again, you know, very, very useful in terms of what we can do with this data. For some reason, that's not. Oh, I know why it's not doing it. Because for some reason, I have to be over on the right there. There we go. But I can then take that data and add it in the context of the document as well. And what I'm doing here is basically using what are called content controls. And I'm sorry the font is a little gray. I should probably use a deeper font for this demo. But basically what's going on is I'm taking data that's entered at the top, I'm taking data that's from Azure, and I'm pushing into a document that's a custom document that I can then save into SharePoint and leverage, let's say, in a workflow or other types of processes that I might have. Now, if we take a look at the code, This one is interesting. How many people have actually done any office development? So a few of you. Okay, good. If we go back into Visual Studio here, let's kill a couple of these. Store location, Azure web part. No, I don't want to save that. And go into, where are we here? Down here. My quote doc. Basically, how I build this doc out, you know, I go file new. And because we're using a content type that's tied to SharePoint, I'll go find new project. I'll go office. And I'll go down here and click 2010. And I'll click Word document or Word template. I can't use a Word add-in necessarily because what I'm trying to do is tie this content type directly to SharePoint. And so click OK. And then what I can do is add some different elements to my document. So you can see here that if I click right click on this, I can add new items. I can go ahead. I can add an actions pane, a ribbon, ribbon XML, all different elements to kind of create this custom document. On mine, what I've got is I have a ribbon. So let me see here. Here's my document. Let's go ahead and view the designer. The one thing I like about this particular quote, actually this is a different one, but what I like about this is when you actually build out a Word template, it actually builds, it treats the document as the designer surface. So essentially what that means is I can take this document, I can go ahead and go view and toolbox, and then take controls and drag and drop them into the context of my document. Now in this case, let's go ahead and take a look at the code behind. I'm leveraging what are called content controls. And again here, it's the same sort of thing, right? If we go ahead and look at the client object model, I'm spinning through this case. I'm going through and I can see that I'm selecting field values at specific elements, element indices. I skip 0, it's a 0-based array. So I'm skipping 0 and I'm picking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 as my key pieces of information that I want to pull from that site or from the stores list. And then I'm going through and I'm populating an object and I'm pushing it back into my Word document. And here, where you can see the globals is basically just this global object in Office that allows you to access different parts of the Office object model. So in this case, I'm accessing the document, the current document, the WCC, or the Word content controls, and of course, I'm setting the text property, which takes data from outside the document and puts it inside the document, thereby binding the two, okay? So it's just a simple way to actually get data into the document. Now, when I save the document, it's going to take all that data that I pushed into the document, and it would save it up into SharePoint intact, okay? So it's a nice, interesting way of interacting with the data. Let's go ahead. So, and then once I do that, there's a couple things you have to do. I'll show you right quick. When you're actually building out this content type, just make sure that you do a couple things. Click File, Options, where are we? Trust Center Settings. Trust Center Settings, Trusted Locations. You have to make sure that wherever you deploy that VSTO, when you publish it to a particular location, you have to make sure, sorry about that, you have to make sure that two locations are trusted. The first is the SharePoint site to which you're deploying that content type or mapping the content type. The second is the place where you're actually publishing that VSTO document, okay? Because what will happen is SharePoint will see the document and it's like, hey, I don't know this assembly. I don't know what's going on here. I don't trust this thing. And so what happens is you have to make sure you have that relationship in terms of trusted location between SharePoint and the Office document, okay? We're coming up on 5:30 here, so what we'll do, we'll jump back to our slides. Managing proposals. And this, again, this is a recap, was the core API of integrating with the SharePoint list, which, again, was our external list. And this, again, would be fairly familiar with you. I think the key difference here, when you're looking at Silverlight, it's the async. When you're looking at .NET, using the client object model, it's execute query. And I think, in summary, because we've done an hour now, SharePoint provides you with a lot of opportunities, right? You know, you saw, I kind of walked through a number of different things, a super quick hour of, you know, how you integrate the two. But SQL Azure is a quick way using SharePoint Designer, SharePoint Client Object Model, Silverlight. Of course, we brought Bing into the mix as well. You know, other things we talked about, custom documents, controls, and all sorts of things that you can build in there as well. But I think the key thing here, as I mentioned this morning, is we're not hosting SharePoint in Azure. This is not a role that you're kind of taking SharePoint like SharePoint Online. But basically what you're looking at this point in time is taking Azure and integrating it with SharePoint in some capacity. Now, other things that you could do above and beyond what I showed you, literally you could think about accessing blob storage and using SharePoint or using Azure, rather, as a repository for larger files, let's say video files. If you wanted to have some scalability in the cloud, you could leverage that and use the REST APIs to interact with that data or interact with those files. You could literally have the .NET service bus, again, to kind of punch a hole back into the firewall to have, on-premises services that are running, and then having your Azure services remotely interacting with those services as well. There's tons of things that you can do, literally. And I think the interesting part is we're at the beginning of this relationship between Azure and SharePoint. There's not a lot of people doing this. Obviously, Azure is fairly new. It's evolving. But there's a lot of capabilities that you can take advantage of, not only in the cloud, but also taking that cloud and pulling it back into SharePoint. So lots of things, I think, to get started, the call to action here, download the SharePoint VM. I've put a link here for you. So if you remember that slide in the beginning where it said VM, everything below the waterline is something you'd have to add on to it. You could download the VM. It's fairly chunky, so give yourself a little bit of time. You can download some information from the Azure Developer Center. So for those of you who haven't got your Azure keys yet, the first thing you want to do is get your developer key. The second thing you want to do is get your developer account so you can get that developer portal that I showed you earlier on in the actual session. And then I've got some walkthroughs on my blog that you can check out. And there's a Channel 9 SharePoint Developer Kit and a Channel 9 Azure Developer Kit that are super, super helpful. For those of you who haven't seen the Channel 9 kits, they run the gamut in terms of what they include. Lots of stuff in there covering all the things that we're talking about over the next 2 days for SharePoint 2010. There's no cost. Again, you can download them and use them at your leisure. And they all are actually retrofitted to the SharePoint VM. So you can download the SharePoint VM, and then you can download all the content and actually add it to the VM, and everything should work fine. So with that said, I'll open it up for questions. We have a few minutes here, and don't be shy. Yep. Yeah. I don't know the exact date. What I would do if I were you, I would keep an eye on PDC. Okay? PDC? PDC is a professional developer conference. It's happening at the end of October. There will be a big splash on all the new stuff with regard to Azure, so definitely keep an eye out. And I think there's going to be some new stuff. I obviously can't say it publicly now, because we haven't disclosed it yet. So what I'll say is keep an eye on PDC. Okay? Any other? Yeah? Is there a vision? To go to the cloud? Yeah, there's definitely a vision. And that vision, depending on who you talk to, could change. But there's definitely a vision. I think patterns and practice is one place as a developer, right? Because ultimately what you want to do is get a sense for how do I as a developer design and deploy the software? How is this going to change my life? How am I going to think about things in a different way? So there's definitely patterns and practice that can provide some of that for you. The Uber vision obviously is, leveraging the cloud for infrastructure, for code, right? And using it as your operating system in the cloud. That's a fairly broad statement though, right? And I think, it's going to take a little time for companies and organizations and developers to figure out how they can leverage the cloud. Certainly there's a perspective of, hey, take some of your IT infrastructure that you can move into the cloud and do it. And I think what we're going to see is a lot of companies probably moving some of the stuff into the cloud right now and then keeping some stuff on-premises. So they'll have this hybrid relationship between the cloud and on-premises. So the long-winded answer, I'm going to my elbow to get to my thumb here. Depending on who you talk to, it'll be a slightly different vision. But definitely, patterns and practices is a place to start. They'll give you some grounded guidance for a developer vision, which is probably what you want in the context of this presentation. And there is some more higher-level stuff which you can get off the Azure site, which will kind of tell you, here's what IaaS is and PaaS and all these kind of software-as-a-service type visions are. Okay? Yes, sir. I'll repeat the question. Unfortunately, are there any costs involved when trying to get started? There are costs. There is a billing cost for Azure. So basically what happens is when you go through the billing process, you provide a credit card, and then anything you accrue gets charged back to that credit card. I know that there are some changes coming down the pike in terms of how you get billed, but definitely there is some sort of billing. And the whole point, right, this is part of the benefit. I say benefit even though I just told you have to pay for it. I say benefit because basically what we're doing is if you think about the cloud and if you think about, you know, your on-premises hardware, you could literally have a server or a rack of servers inside your lab that are running at 25%. But in terms of cost, you're paying 100% of that server, right? You're paying maintenance and things like that. This is where you say, okay, well, I'm just going to take this, you know, what these things I'm using here, and I'm going to move that 20% of the, or 25% of the 100%, move it into the cloud. Now what you're paying is you're paying on a usage basis. And literally, it's much, much cheaper when you compare the costs to the cloud, you know, to on-premises. To get started as a developer, though, you go through the process, provide a credit card, you get started, and hopefully that's something that your company would take care of. Hopefully. There is a trial period, I think. There's like a month or two trial period to get you started. So the good news is you don't have to pay up front. Yay! Any other questions? Come on, this is exciting stuff. Cloud, woo! Beer, cloud, beer, cloud. Yes, sir. Is all the data stored in the European or Middle Eastern or district? I'll show you something. I think I can show you something. The short answer to the question is when you're actually building out your services, you can determine where things are actually stored. So you can see here that I've got my geographic location. Basically, Microsoft has all these data centers around the world. When you build out your service and you deploy it to a particular region, it would basically be deployed to that particular data center in that region. I think there's four or five key areas, ranging from Asia, Pacific, to Europe, to the States. I don't know exactly where all the locations are. But if you went through the process of actually building this out, you'd see there's a choice of about four. And, of course, I think the key determining factor is, you know, where are your customers? If your customers are going to be in Asia, you probably want to, you know, deploy your service or data in Asia and have it kind of served up in that area, right? Or, you know, alternatively, if your customers are in the States or in Europe, you probably want to leverage that data center just from a performance standpoint. Okay? Yep. Is it, I'm sorry? You break things? I don't, the other guys here don't break things, right? Yeah, so that's a great question. So basically, it is very easy to restore, right? So if we go up here to my service, let's say Contoso Store Manager. Actually, no, let's go back here, SBC Get Rate. Basically, what we've got here is a service, right? Remember I showed you how I built the service in the tools and I kind of was ready to publish. What if I screw up, right? If I have a bug in my code, basically what I do is I click upgrade and I republish those two files. Remember I showed those two files at the beginning of the session? I republish those two files and I kind of browse to where they are and then I go down here and you can see here I've got some other choices and I click deploy. Okay? And so that redeploys the code, and it takes roughly 10 minutes. Okay? So literally, I could be up and running again in 10 minutes with my new code. So the short answer is, don't worry. There's failover. So if you happen to have a bug in your code, you can fix it very quickly. All right? Yes. Yes, there's a restore mechanism. You could actually mirror on-premises and off-premises or cloud-based data. So you could, you know, have that mapping there as well. So the point is a very quick restore point, whether it be code or whether it be data. Guys look so tired. Has the day been that draining? Or have I just totally drained you? Any other questions? I think from an Azure perspective, you know, when we think about where Microsoft's going, this is one of the key initiatives, you know, for the cloud moving forward. You're obviously going to see SharePoint Online at some point in time here in the future. And so start thinking about Azure and the services. You know, we showed you some stuff this morning, the fancy demos, we call them, the fancy Contoso and Fabricam demos. But this was more kind of garage-based Frankenstein sample code that I've just been building and just trying to figure out how you can interconnect these two things. We'll do more work. One of the things I showed you this morning was that Blue Yonder demo. You know, heavy Silverlight, SQL Azure, using some of the core principles and patterns I was just showing you, right? SQL adapters or service calls or REST APIs, all the stuff you guys already know. And I think that's the key thing to keep in mind, right? When you go to Azure, you're not learning this entirely new set of skills. You're applying skills that you already know. So keep that in mind as well, okay? So any other questions just to close down? I want to make sure I don't hold you here too long. You're probably all hungry and ready to go back to the hotel and get out your email, right? Woo! Because we know the office doesn't stop just because we're out of it. We wish it did, but. All right, well, thank you very much for your time. Enjoy tomorrow. And if you have any questions, I'll hang out here for a few minutes, okay? Thank you.